Guten Morgen, Paul. Hello, hello again. Come in, my friend. Come in. Pull up a seat. You're looking well. How are you feeling?
Oh, Dr. Happy Sandwich. I'm okay. I've just been lying awake at night worrying about things.
Oh, again. Oh, well, what's on your mind this week? What's kept you up?
There's lots of things I'm worrying about. I worry about vegetarian Duran Duran fans. I mean, do they really get anything out of the song Hungry Like the Wolf?
I would guess not. No, that's you might be putting a bit too much emphasis and weight on that. What else is coming to your mind?
I have this friend Mike, and he really likes, you know, he seems to have good taste, and then he doesn't like Emily Blunt, and I don't know what that's about. And, you know, all this stuff, it just piles up on me. I just worry and I worry and I worry, and I'm never sure what to do about it. And, you know, I think, you know, maybe, I mean, should I talk about it on a podcast? I'm not sure.
Oh, he's vanished. Oh, that's a bit of a relief. I'm off to the golf course.
Where is your Shangri-La now? Where is your Shangri-La now? Counting down to zero hour. There ain't no superheroes now. There ain't no superheroes, they're underground. Happy ever after, counting down to zero hour.
Hello and welcome to DC OCD, the DC Events Podcast, where we look at every single DC event in order and give it a rating out of 100. And this time we have reached 1994. So what happened in 1994? Well, there's a couple of things we're sort of skipping over, one of which is the Worlds Collide crossover, which happened in the Superman books with the Dakotaverse, the Milestone books. And why are we skipping that? Because I don't think anything came from it at all. So I think it didn't count in any way. Another thing that we're skipping, which is probably fairly important, but it's not really a crossover, and that's Emerald Twilight, which is where Hal Jordan went nuts, killed most of the Green Lantern Corps, and then Kyle Rayner became the new only Green Lantern. So that's a really important story, but it only really happens in three issues of Green Lantern, so doesn't really qualify either, which is a pity, because it's probably worth talking about that one. But today we're going to look at Zero Hour, which was the big event of 1994 with quite a build-up, and it was written by Dan Jurgens, and it was also drawn, coincidentally, by Dan Jurgens with help from Jerry Ordway. It was lettered by Gaspar Saladino, coloured by Gregory Wright, and edited by K.C. Carlson with help from Mike McAvaney. And I'm not looking at this alone. I've got someone on board to help me, and it is Doug Zavisha, friend of the Doom Patrol podcast and friend of DCOCD and the designer of our beautiful logo. How are you, Doug?
Oh, I'm doing great, Paul. How are you doing?
Good. I need to take a breath after all that.
All right.
Yeah. So you're quite a fan of this one, aren't you?
It sounds like I might be more of a fan than others, but part of that fandom comes from, if you look at the cover for the first issue, Zero Hour number 4, which, why start with 4, we'll get to, I suppose, and across the bottom, there are all those Hawks, and Hawkman and I have a little bit of a history.
Oh, this is a big one for the Hawks, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, I mean, there's lots of Hawks for your buck in these books. So anyway, Zero Hour, it was 5 issues. It did some weirdness. So as Doug alluded to, it started with issue 4 and then counted backwards from 4 to 3 to 2, let me do my math, to 1 and then to issue 0. And along the way, there were about 30 tie-in issues, which was, you know, part of the Zero Hour event, with time going bonkers and haywire and interesting things happening in different books. And then it was followed up by sort of like everything reset itself, and there were 40 Zero issues for the DC Universe at the time. So Doug, what would you say this one is about?
Well, quite honestly, I'll keep it pretty quick. DC had a crisis, that being Crisis on Infinite Earths. After that crisis, some of the things were still broken. So Zero Hour was viewed as a chance to perhaps fix those broken things.
Right.
And there you go.
Okay, so what do you think was broken? Because this sort of eludes me. I mean, I remember it at the time, but looking back now, it's like, what exactly was it fixing? Because I knew the mission statement of Crisis on Infinite Earths was pretty, you know, clear and explicit. But this one, I'm not really sure what's broken. And, you know, perhaps things like Hawkman's continuity was one of the issues, because that mucked it up a bit after the Crisis on Infinite Earth. But it's not very clearer at the end of this, perhaps. I mean, is that a fair statement, or am I being picky?
I think it's pretty fair. And to be honest with you, to take it beyond what I just summarized, I'm going to just maybe share a thought from Dan Juergens from the Hawkman Companion. And I think he summed it up what it was supposed to be pretty nicely. I'm not sure if it's accurate.
Could you just explain what the Hawkman Companion is for our listeners?
Yeah. The Hawkman Companion is it's Hawkman's friend. No, the Hawkman Companion is a book that came out from Tomorrow's Publishing. And this is like selfish shilling right here. I wrote and designed the book. It's a book about Hawkman, stem to stern, soup to nuts, his origin in 1939 up to when the book was published in 2008. And in the book, I was able to interview folks like Joe Kubert, Shelley Moldoff, Dan Juergens, Jeff Johns, James Robinson. And specifically, I wanted to talk to Dan Juergens when I was writing the book because of Zero Hour's impact on Hawkman. Hawkman seems to be one of the major beneficiaries at the time of what happened with Zero Hour and what came out of it. So when Dan and I were talking, Dan wanted to backtrack a little bit early in the conversation, and he said, here's what Zero Hour was supposed to be in terms of a project, and this is how we offered it to the various editors and through them to all the writers at DC, which is, we're going to do this miniseries. It's going to be called Zero Hour. Because it's going to involve a great deal of time travel type elements to it, it is an opportunity that if you have a problem with a character or something you feel needs to be fixed, this is the opportunity to do it. Because it's not necessarily that you would wipe out that character's history, but you would be able to adjust that character appropriately during the time of Zero Hour. In addition, every single book was going to be published by DC at the time that was going to have an issue zero. And in that issue zero, you were going to have, essentially, it was a writer's chance to explain who that character or main characters were, why they did what they do, essentially their reason for existing, and give a sampling as to why every reader who picked up that book should stay on board. It was almost like a mini Bible within 22 pages. And Dan and I talked for an amazingly long time just about the whole thing, but we got into more than just Zero Hour. But the whole premise of the conversation initially was, why Hawkman, why Zero Hour? And I think that addresses it right there as far as what DC intended, or at least what Dan Juergens intended.
Uh-huh. That's fantastic, Doug. Well done. Okay, so what do you think are the biggest deals about Zero Hour for you? You know, the things that make it special?
Well, you and I were talking offline before this, and don't want to steal your thunder too much, but you had mentioned that you were looking forward to it at the time, and I was as well. I was a big DC reader at the time. This was 94, so, you know, it was drinking money in DC Comics, I think, was where I was splitting my time and money. But the four, I grabbed one big point from each issue, and I recall at the time it seemed like a great series that was going to have a lot of potential. But in issue four, Wally West disappears and Batgirl shows up. Batgirl had previously been hopelessly injured in The Killing Joke, paralyzed, Barbara Gordon Batgirl, that is. So issue four gives you a couple what-the's going right into it. Issue three, the JSA gets aged, winding up with the apparent deaths of the original Golden Age Atom, Dr. Midnight, Hourman, and Dr. Fate. And I got a feeling maybe we'll talk about what happens with Dr. Fate a little bit later. issue two, you get the Team Titans team, that's T-E-A-M Titans, undone. And it's revealed that Wave Rider is Extant, who at this point everyone just presumed Extant was Monarch. Monarch was Hank Hall. And Hank Hall, as listeners in listener land there know, was Hawk. So go back and listen to the episode for Armageddon, or not, and just take what you got right here and move forward. Or you could listen to Armageddon and, you know, come back to Zero Hour and just make it this endless time loop, which may or may not be good. but then issue one, Dan Juergens revealed that Parallax was really the mastermind behind it all. And to your point earlier, Paul, as far as events that were skipped, Emerald Twilight being skipped clues in readers who Parallax is, and it really does play into Zero Hour. So I'm glad that you gave that little lead in with Emerald Twilight, especially since Hal Jordan winds up being the big bad of this series. And then issue zero, Ollie Queen, Green Arrow, apparently kills Hal Jordan, and the universe is restarted, and we're able to do spoilers like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Those were the big beats of the story to me. There are moments in the story where it just feels like there maybe should have been a little bit more, or a lot more. Once upon a time, this maybe could have been a competitor for Crisis on Infinite Earths as far as events go, but it just seems like it maybe didn't have a good plan to build from or a good foundation.
Yeah, I'd like to say, I mean, the first issue, or issue four, ironically, is really strong. It actually really echoes lots of the events of the start of Crisis on Infinite Earths, right down to, Batgirl and the Joker encounter and, you know, what happens to Wally West as the Flash fading away. So there's lots of, literal echoes of the Crisis. So it really puts you in a mind of, oh, this is just like the Crisis. It's going to be awesome. And pretty soon after that, the transition from Monarch to Extant happens in a Showcase comic leading into it, sort of. And I can't really see why Monarch had to become Extant. I can't see the through line. I mean, part of it is that Hank has gone nuts. And when he killed Dove, he took on her powers, and that made him smarter somehow. And then he, you know, he's this time big bad just because. And then, you know, and then as it goes further on, it works out that he's actually working for Parallax, who's Hal Jordan. So you've got two heroes who are now baddies who are working together, and you're not really sure why exactly. I mean, Hal wants to reset everything and save the universe, and erase the bad that happened to Coast City, his hometown city, which got destroyed in the aftermath of Death of Superman. But it really feels like the story just is a bucking bronco that gets away from the creative team entirely at some point.
Yeah.
And then you have that really weird reveal when Extant takes off his mask and it's Wave Rider. And it's like, is it Wave Rider? And then it's like, oh, no, it's just Hank now has Wave Rider's powers because he sucked them away at some point and that gave him Wave Rider's glowing hair or something.
Right.
Yeah. And it gets, you know, it starts so focused and then it just sort of loses lots of focus and people are vanishing left, right and center, you know, and by the time Batman vanishes, you know, you're not taking it very seriously at that point. But yeah, there's this really weird bit where, you know, it's like someone breaks into the old folks home and beats up the JSA really viciously.
Right.
You know, and before that, the JSA are very much sitting around going, oh, we're so old, we're kind of useless. And then, you know, Extant goes, you're old and useless, and kills a bunch of them. And you go, oh, that's not very nice. And they go, oh, we're going to retire now because, you know, we didn't get killed, but the rest did, and we're old and useless. And it's just, it's kind of distasteful if you've got any sort of affection for the JSA, you know, the classic Justice Society, and they're all sort of, you know, getting whooped and dying and then slinking away as, you know, as failures. And it's kind of unpleasant.
Yeah, it definitely is. And yeah, so the beating up the JSA is not something that made Dan Jurgens very popular with anybody, I think. JSA were pretty well beloved, even in the 90s, or especially in the 90s, because they had just come off a 10-issue series that was drawn by Mike Parabek, and the writer escapes me at this moment.
Ben Straczynski?
I think you're right, sir. Yeah, the JSA didn't make a whole lot of friends. The apparent turning of Hawk and Hal Jordan and the team up of the two of them. I mean, I don't know if the two even ever met, you know, say in the pages of Crisis on Infinite Earths, let alone anywhere else. But then it gets into almost becoming like a vanity project. And I know with this format of the DCOCD, you guys have looked at the four different categories that these events fall into. And way at the beginning of this series, you had mentioned some examples of your different categories, those being Fixer, Occupier, Launcher, and Vanity. And you had mentioned specifically Zero Hour was intended as a Fixer or appeared to be a Fixer. And you're not wrong, but I think it hits all four. to your point, issue number four is a really strong launch and appears to be, hey, we're going to be a fixer. We're going to take care of some of these things. Look at that. Batgirl can walk again. We're going to maybe straighten out this whole Flash thing. But then, like, issues after the JSA gets beaten up a little bit, so the remnants of issue three into issue two and issue one becomes kind of an occupier. And it's an occupier a little bit blended with a vanity project. And I'm not saying that Dan Jurgens is a vain creator by any means, but this was certainly a project that seemed to be more of a passion project for Dan that maybe he lost the handle on due to the fact that it wasn't just Dan's project anymore. It had become a project much larger in that it was going to impact everything in the DC universe by giving everything a zero issue. I almost said a 0 hour again, at which point the series becomes a launcher. So it really hits all four of the categories. And to your point of it being a bucking bronco and hitting all four of the categories, it never really settles on any one of them.
Yeah, I'd like to agree with that. In fact, I will. I mean, there are some fun stuff along the way. Like, some of the books took the opportunity to basically explore the history and the different versions of characters. So there's a Man of Steel issue where Superman's just sort of basically come back from the death of Superman, and Batman is similarly just coming off the Nightfall and coming back as Batman. And they encounter each other, but Batman keeps changing, and there's different versions of him. So he gets the Dark Knight Returns Batman, he gets classic Neil Adams Batman, he gets the original Batman with the, you know, just the black logo on the chest, and then 60s smiling Batman in this. So, you know, that's a lot of fun. But there were some stories like that a few books did, and, you know, different versions of Alfred come in some stories, and, you know, Superman's parents arrive in, you know, his real Kryptonian parents arrive in Smallville. So a lot of this sort of stuff happened. But unfortunately, just the nature of the crossover, because time is changing at the end of it all, it all sort of becomes inconsequential by the end of it. You know, and the death of Flash sort of just sort of drifts away, and Flash, Wally West, comes back stronger than ever. You know, and I think some of the best stuff that happened around 0 hour, I feel, was going to happen anyway. Like the introduction of Impulse, it didn't need 0 hour, but it sort of coincided with 0 hour.
Right.
The introduction of Starman, Jack Knight, you know, that book was going to come anyway, but, you know, 0 hour just happened to be a good spot to launch it. So you get the very first appearance of Jack Knight in 0 hour number two, I believe. So, yeah, are there any of the tie-ins that, you know, work for you and you like?
Well, as I've touched on in, you know, making this a vanity project again for myself, Hawkman really benefited from it. Unfortunately, that didn't really have legs to keep going, or didn't have wings to keep flying, as it were. But coming out of the 0 hour or zero issue of Hawkman, Hawkman had a unified purpose. It was one character. It got into the notion of possible multiple personalities, and William Messner Lebs did a fine job writing that series out of there. Steve Lieber was drawing it, and it became a pretty gritty superhero book that did a lot more than I think anyone expected with the issues leading up to 0 hour. You mentioned Flash. Flash was fun at that point, with Impulse coming in. With Justice League, I think that's around the time that Triumph came in, and we got a little bit of a untold history of the Justice League. Some of the other stuff that came out of it, Starman is undoubtedly one of the best things that came out of the series. But as
Starman is the Hitman of 0 hour, isn't it?
yeah, it is. Maybe even a little bit bigger than that at that point, right?
I agree, yeah. And from Starman, you really get the return of the JSA and the,
yes,
you know, the revival of the affection for those legacy characters.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest things that really came out of 0 hour, more so than the titles themselves, are some of the creator renaissances or creator rebirths, to use a more current term. Like George Perez came back into comics shortly after 0 hour, working with Jurgens on the Titans. Jerry Ordway would eventually launch Shazam, which was supposed to have been, as I understand it, a title that came out of the 0 hour, zero issues, but it wound up being a little bit farther after 0 hour ended, I believe. just a bunch of different creators having a chance to spread their wings a little bit or try things out a little bit more. I think that was where the benefit came and the fun really started to happen. The zero issues gave you a chance to just kind of sample everything. I remember at the time, the Ray and Damage were two newer titles with newer characters. And their zero issues, I think, were handled pretty well. As I recall, I haven't reread them, which I probably should have done as homework. But I do recall those two being particularly fun reads.
Yeah, and there were other changes. I guess like Green Arrow was, at this stage, it was post the Mike Grell run. And then they were, you know, I think around this time they introduced Connor Hawke, getting ready to hand the book over to him. Guy Gardner was going through some more changes at this point. So he'd left the Green Lantern Corps and got a yellow ring, and then he'd become a warrior, and he had this sort of red armored costume. And around this time, you know, in the midst of Zero Hour, he starts to, you know, manifest weapons out of his arms and things like that, and he becomes more organic in his warrior personality and things like that. So, yeah, a bit of fun there. And they did a complete overhaul of the Legion of Superheroes at this point. So they had the Legionnaires book and Legion of Superheroes and Valor, and they did a series, I think it was called End of an Era or something, and wrapped them all up and did a big complete relaunch of the Legion with Mark Waid, you know, basically starting from scratch again and telling their origin and taking them forward to that point. So, you know, in that regard, it really was a pure launcher. And they did tweaks on books like Legion with the dots that became Rebels with the dots and things like that. But, you know, not too much change there. Yeah, and we got a few newer series out of it, like Manhunter, not loved or and not very well remembered. Primal Force, which has some fans.
I'm one.
There you go. Xenobrood. Are there any fans of that? I'm not sure.
You could ask Clinton.
Extreme Justice, which came out of...
No. You said it wrong.
Oh, sorry.
Extreme Justice.
Yeah, which was a sort of replacement of Justice League International at that point, because I think we had Justice League America back at that stage. Yeah, that continued some very... 90-ness sensibilities.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, and I guess we want to talk about Fate, do we? No, we probably don't.
Want to?
Yeah, so the classic Dr. Fate, you know, yellow and blue helmet look gave way to the dude with the big knife and the Unk symbol over his eye.
Yes, but the big knife was made from the melted down helmet of Naboo.
Oh, that's so cool.
Or Naboo, or however. I'm getting my Naboo and my Naboo confused between Star Wars and DC Comics here. So, but yeah, cool knife.
But I mean, one story I do remember fondly, which, you know, I reread it the other night, which, and I'm not sure why I'm so fond of it, but it was all these time villains doing a heist together. So you had the Time Commander and the Clock King. And anyway, so, you know, three or four time villains of, you know, really CD list level. And they all get caught up in time shenanigans and then they fade away to nothing. And that was one of the big things, was there were several pages in this event where Dan Jurgens did the art of blank pages.
Yes.
So, which is a good gig if an artist can get that, I'm sure.
Indeed. I hope he got the originals. I can only imagine the people at the printing house when those are coming off the press going, oh, God, what happened?
I'm sure there were very clear notes about it and maybe some supervision on the ground.
I would hope.
All right. So I think we've sort of unpacked a lot of what happened in it. Anything else you want to add, Doug?
I don't think so. I think the best thing to come out of it were the zero issues. And as I noted in the quote from Dan there, from Dan Jurgens, they were intended to be like a 22-page Bible, character Bible. And some of the issues did that better than others. Obviously, the ones that where a character had more than one title, it kind of restricted, or not necessarily restricted, but it almost seemed like they didn't align as well as if they just had the one title. Like Hawkman, I remember, had a good issue. Aquaman, as I mentioned, Ray and Damage. So those zero issues, if you happen across them in a bargain bin, those are certainly a good, fun read to snatch up. You might get some threads of things going on around it, but for the most part, you get a nice summary of the characters.
And there's only a few that were actually the lead into a series. Many of them just happen wherever they were in the run. Like, I think Aquaman had just had issue 2 and then he got an issue 0. So, you know, it was a bit all over the shop. But, I think some of them are really good and some of them are, you know, well, the titles that you remember and are beloved, they work well. And the ones that you've forgotten about were forgotten for a reason, I think.
Indeed.
Anyway, so if you want to know more about Zero Hour, you just have to wait a few months. And then I think there's a podcast called Zero Hour Strikes coming, which is from the people who did the Invasion First Strike podcast, because they have run out of Invasion by December. And I think they're looking for something new to do. So that's Siskoid and Bass. And I'm looking forward to that. And I hope they're not put off by our scores. Anyway, that's a good segue. Shall we get into the scoring?
Let's.
So our first scale that we're going to judge this on is eventiness. So I feel that it has a pretty good scope. It encompasses the DC universe of the day. So it draws on all the pieces. I'm not sure if the eventiness is sustained throughout. So it's sort of coming out of Zero Hour, it doesn't feel like, you know, everyone's just come out of a big event. It's more like, oh, let's tell some origins. So for that reason, I am going to give it a 6 for eventiness. So Doug, where are you on eventiness with this?
I went with an 8 on eventiness. The reason being, I looked at it a little bit differently in that this was branded as a crisis in time, and therefore it was a definite inheritor to the Crisis on Infinite Earth's legacy. So it should have been fixing things and doing eventy type stuff, and it did a great job of trying to grab a little bit of all the characters across the DC universe, if not individual appearances from every character. And at the start, very eventy. You got to kill a Flash to have an event, right? Or at least that's what Crisis told you. So Juergens checked that box. And at the end of it, you had the eventiness of, well, here's a new timeline. And they didn't get the luxury of the post-Crisis history of DC that Wolfman and Perez had that luxury to have once Crisis on Infinite Earths was finalized. But you've got this beautiful fold-out cover on the end of issue 0 that helps you kind of rejigger the timeline and figure out where everything's supposed to be. And then every issue got a 0 issue. So I gave it an 8.
Right. And where do you sit on the writing?
The writing. I gave it a 6. And that's probably a little bit more than it deserves.
Ooh.
But what the reason I gave it a 6 was there was a purpose that Dan Juergens went in with. And I think for at least for Dan Juergens, he came out with that purpose still intact. He gave everybody a through line, which they could then pull from. And by everybody, I mean the other editors, writers, creators. They had a line that they could pull from in order to do what needed to be done on their books to make their books viable again, or to make their characters more attractive if there were some issues. A lot of the characters were already established or newly established, like Kyle Rayner. They weren't going to reset Green Lantern at that point, but it gave the Green Lantern franchise a chance to refocus and to change the attitude of, you know, who's good, who's bad. And the writing itself within the series gets a little heavy-handed or ham-fisted at times, but Juergens does a good job in that he's writing and drawing, so he's writing for himself, essentially.
Okay, well, I'm going to be slightly harsher than you and give it a 5. And I think I'm disillusioned with the plotting as it goes along, as the core book goes along, rather than the actual writing. Like, I think the dialogue for everybody is great. Everyone's voices are spot on. But the whole, you know, Monarch is extant. Oh, no, he's Wave Rider. You know, all that is just muddled. And it confuses the story, and it really, you know, like, you've got this at the end of it, you're just left going, oh, well, what's the deal with Exton? Who is he now? And, you know, where is he now? And all this sort of stuff. And yeah, it's a bit of a mess. And, you know, it was interesting that I think Geoff Johns, as a writer, went and cleaned up some of the Exton mess when he was writing JSA and, you know, sort of,
right.
Okay, this character is really not Hank Hall. You know, let's address that. And so there's a little bit of, I don't know, I don't think that a lot of things came out of it clearer. You know, perhaps that's the fault of the individual writers. But, I mean, so overall, 6. I mean, it's not bad. But it could be, you know, a lot tighter and a lot crisper.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but the art, I think the art is pretty good throughout. I mean, particularly as the event starts, you've got Jurgens and Ordway, so how can you go wrong with that? So,
right.
I mean, yeah. And, you know, most of the time stuff is really good. Probably the showcase issues were sort of written by people who weren't quite ready for drawn by people who weren't quite ready for comics. But overall, I'm going to give the art 7. 7. So, yeah.
That's exactly where I hit, sir.
Oh, excellent.
And as you mentioned, you got Jurgens and Ordway. How can you really go wrong?
Yeah.
They threw in a bunch of Kirby Crackle just to make it even more artsy. And the one thing that I wanted to make note of with Jurgens is I don't think anybody does vertical panels quite the way Dan Jurgens does. He seems to be kind of the master of telling a story with verticals as opposed to always having to be the widescreen horizontal double page spread, you know, maximize the paper, minimize the effort type of thing.
Mm.
So I sat with a 7 as well.
Excellent. And this brings us to our final category, which is impact and legacy. Doug, do you want to start taking this one home?
Yeah, I gave it a 5. The reason is not a whole lot is sustained from the impact and the legacy as far as the titles that we mentioned that spun out of it. But some of the results are just simply undeniable. Starman is a series that's beloved. You talk to people about comics or you talk to people who are trying to get into comics and what comics should I read? And without fail, people say Watchmen or Dark Knight or Starman or Sandman. Those seem to be the big four from DC that pop in to almost every conversation when you're trying to hook somebody into comics or trying to come up with a recommendation of here's a great comic to read. So if nothing else, this series gave us Starman from a launching point. But as I already touched on, it also gave some creators a chance to get a nice fresh start or a new chance to be seen by new fans. And then the biggest reason I gave it a 5 as far as impact and legacy is it did what Marvel has been doing every, seems like 3 or 4 months now, in that it gave DC a chance to relaunch where it needed to relaunch. And not everything started with a 0 hour issue, but it certainly gave them the opportunity to say, okay, well, here's a fresh start. Here's a number 0 across the board. It's the only thing that could possibly be better than a number 1, but there you go, readers, enjoy.
Right. Wow. Yeah, that's true. Okay. Well, my score for Impact Legacy, I think in some ways this is, well, I'll stop sugarcoating it. It's 3. I gave it 3 out of 10. And the reason I think it's a 3 is I think everybody had this opportunity to do something, and I feel like most books squandered it. Or, I don't think there's a lot of difference between the 0 issues for some titles, or they're repositioning them, but it's, you know, it's basically fiddling with a failing formula. So you've had, the Team Titans had run their course at this point, and then you reposition the Titans book at that point, and it's, you know, it's rearranging the deck chairs on a sinking ship at this point, I think.
Yeah, for some of them.
Yeah, and there was no differentiation. So, there were, you know, everything got a 0 hour issue, whether it deserved it or not, or whether it was warranted, or whether the creative team... I mean, it would have been a good opportunity to put new creators on with zeros, and I don't think they did that very much at all. It was more, you know, the same teams, you know, having a crack at a special issue in the midst of their run on a book that was going to be cancelled soon, in many cases.
I think you're right.
But, I mean, the Starman thing certainly is, you know, very special. But as I suspect, you know, it would have happened anyway without 0 hour. I don't think anyone goes, well, 0 hour had to happen for Starman to happen. Yeah, not really. Anyway, but one of the things we don't do this scoring alone. So, you know, Doug and I, we have our scores that if we'd given it 10, we would, for everything, we would have a score of 80. And because we want to score out of 100, we need 20 more points to come from somewhere. And that somewhere is a special person called the Semi-OCD. And this case, it's a young guy called Mike Garvey. I believe Mike Garvey, he's from the Waiting for Doom podcast. You know, he's a bit of a new podcaster, but he could be one to watch. So let's hear from Mike.
Hello, Paul. Hello, Doug. And hello, listeners. It's Mike here with my semi-OCD contribution for Zero Hour, which I will preface by saying that all I've read of this event is the collected trade paperback, collecting issues 8 and 9 of Showcase 94, with issues 4 to 0 of the Zero Hour main series, and the Detective Comics tie-in issue, issue 678 from September of 1994. So, it's interesting that the event covered in episode 13 of DC OCD is Zero Hour, as it brings to mind a saying usually only heard in bingo halls. 13, unlucky for some. In this instance, the unlucky ones are those who have read this event, as it is not great. Actually, I find that it's not even good, let alone great. If I could sum up the event in one word, it would be cruel. Part launcher, part fixer, this follow-up to Crisis on Infinite Earths attempted to unify inconsistent timelines, but did so at a confusing breakneck speed at the expense of characters such as Wally West, the majority of the JSA, and the Legion of Superheroes. The main villain of the piece offers characters a chance of a new life, but in a universe made to his designs, and in the end it's mostly for naught. Zero Hour continued the bastardization of Hal Jordan with the reveal that he was behind the whole affair because clearly Emerald Twilight didn't do enough damage to him, spoilers, and really makes me wonder what the heck DC had against any Hawk-based characters in the 90s. Hank Hall, formerly the Hawk of Hawk and Dove, gets more salt in the monarch-shaped wound by being turned into extant, while Hawkman's history and character become more confusing, well, to me anyway. While Crisis on Infinite Earths was an exciting and interesting way for DC to write their continuity, Zero Hour comes across to me as their way of saying, you know what, we kind of goofed up again, let's sweep it all under the rug as quickly as possible and start again. Oh, and it's all Parallax's fault. Ugh. Anyway, onto my scores. Eventiness. Yes, it was big and impacted the DCU at large, but was it really necessary? As I'm still on the fence about this event in general, I'm giving it 5. Writing. If it's not a few pages of chronal temporal mumbo-jumbo, it's a lot of characters standing around figuring out what to do about said chronal temporal mumbo-jumbo and their impending doom. Of course, there's the obligatory fight scenes, even a hero fight towards the end, yay. The revealed connections, if you can call them that, between Wave Rider and Extant and Extant and Parallax induced eye rolls and headaches for me. 4. Art and covers. Overall, the art is very of its time. Lots of power stances and grimaces, but I don't think it's aged very well. The covers are good, giving a decent snapshot of the events within each issue, but the interior art is just okay. Instances of mass gatherings of heroes just look overcrowded, instead of making me think, oh cool, everyone's here, oh wow, including that character. Again, it's another 4. Impact and legacy. Well, let's see. The Legion got rebooted. Hawkman got his different versions all merged into one, I guess. What else? Batman got retconned to never having confronted his parents' killer, so goodbye Batman Year 2. And he became more of an urban legend. The Justice League International ended, as did the Team Titans, which is probably for the best, considering how they were used in Zero Hour. Meanwhile, the majority of the books that did launch out of this event, Extreme Justice, Fate, Rebels 94, Manhunter, Primal Force, and Xenobrood are, to this day, rarely mentioned, to the best of my knowledge. Zero Hour not only rides on the coattails of the superior Crisis on Infinite Earth, it also shits upon them. 3. So in summary, that's Eventiness, 5. Writing, 4. Art and Covers, 4. Impact Legacy, 3. In full DC OCD mode, this would be a total of 16, but as I am semi-OCD for this episode, that becomes 8. I'm going to sign off now, and thank you for letting me be part of this episode, and I will quickly return this book back to the shelf. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Bye.
All right, so if we look at it, we'll do some maths now and add it up. So, Doug, you gave it 26, I gave it 21, and Mike gave it, 16, and we halved that down to 8. Mike gave it 8, and we add those together, and look at that. The total for Zero Hour is 55. So, you know, it's above the 50% mark, but That puts it somewhere in the void between Armageddon 2001, which came in at 64, and War of the Gods, which came in at 48. So, you know, officially this is better than War of the Gods, but not as good as Armageddon 2001. And please don't argue with us, okay? This is three people came up with these scores. It's not personal.
But I think we can all agree with the fact that it's better than Bloodlines.
Yes. Yeah. Well, okay. So, yeah, we have no promos to play, but look out for 0 Hour Strikes coming at the end of the year 2018 if you're listening to this podcast in the future. And I think we should look at our feedback now. So we have two fairly long emails, so I'll take you through them. So the first one came from Mike Bailey, who is a podcaster who, with a bit of a focus on Superman, fair to say. And he said, "Hey mates, I've been meaning to write into the show for some time because I've been enjoying it immensely." I'm apologizing, I don't speak at all like Mike Bailey, if you've ever heard him talk. "I'm a mark for DC events, and the fact that you are doing general conversations about the stories and the art and not doing an issue-by-issue examination is a nice change of pace from the deeper dive certain podcasters, myself included, take. It's almost fitting that my first email is about the death of Superman, since I've spent the better part of my podcasting career covering the Man of Steel. I appreciate you mentioning From Crisis to Crisis, which I did in a previous episode, though you mentioned that my co-host was Scott Gardner, who is a wonderful man, and I've spent many hours talking comics with him, but not the post-crisis Superman. That's Jeffrey Taylor. Don't feel bad. Shag messed that up too. I'm sorry, Mike, and I'm sorry, Jeffrey, and I'm sorry, Scott. I just generally and sorry. Anyway, Mike goes on, "I try not to argue taste because it's a zero-sum game, and I'm not going to demand that you like something I like, but there are two points I wanted to counter. Point one, the Justice League issue where Superman is being interviewed by Cat Grant. This is one of my favourite parts of Death of Superman for a variety of reasons. One, the art by Juergens and Burchett is amazing. Two, it's not simply Superman sitting down for an interview. It's Superman sitting down at a high school and taking questions from young people, which is broadcast to high schools around the country. This is Superman taking time out of his schedule to actually talk to people and make himself more accessible. Also, there's a nice scene where the student asks if he's afraid if he's going to die, which dramatically fits into the story it's part of." Yeah, I was a bit rough on that bit. Point two, should Superman come back to life? No. Point two, should Superman coming back to life have taken away points from the story? I think you all gave some pretty good reasons why, and maybe I'm being a little sensitive here, but as someone that has been following Superman for 5 years, when the death of Superman happened, him coming back was essential. On a purely logical level, I can see why where someone would say, well, he came back, so that takes away from the emotion, but I think it misses the larger point of what the death and return saga was. Like Nightfall, which was not done to cash in on the success of Death of Superman, as some believe, the theme of the death and return of Superman is how does the world react when their greatest hero dies? The death was only the beginning. Funeral for a Friend explored how those who cared about Superman dealt with his loss. Reign of the Superman explored who would take his place, and it's not a coincidence that one of those claiming the mantle, the Eradicator, has a more violent style than the Man of Steel, which was right on point in the violent world of comics in 1993. Ultimately, the saga showed that Superman had a purpose and that only Superman could be Superman, and you don't get that unless he comes back to life. I feel kind of bad that my first email seemed to be me arguing with you, so I'll end by saying that I thought you did a great job covering the major beats of the story. It is an odd read nowadays because of the structure of the books at the time, but I feel you gave this epic its due. Keep up the great work, gentlemen. You keep putting them out and I'll keep listening. Regards, Michael Bailey." Yeah, thanks, Michael, and, you know, I'm sorry if we, you know, it was a bit weird that we talked about how, you know, he came back and that was wrong because, you know, he obviously needed to come back for this story to have a point. Anyway, moving on, we did get an email from Dr. Ange about Nightfall, and he said, "This podcast has been fascinating for me to listen to as I kind of score things in my head and then I see if my thoughts are on par with the experts," in quotes. "This latest episode sort of showed how the panel affects the results. I think Nightfall is something of a mess. Outside of the image of Batman getting his back broken by Bane, what is the lasting impact of this story? And as someone who bought Sword of Azrael, loved the concept of Saint Dumas, and definitely loved his original costume, the only thing Nightfall did for me is ruin a new character. Thankfully, Jean-Paul was redeemed a bit in his own book and in recent times. But when you get Chris and Andy on as experts, self-proclaimed huge Batman fans, I knew the fix was in. So while 92 surprised me, their reasoning behind their scores at least made some sense. And this is all somewhat confessional, as I gave The Death of Superman a high 90 score and wondered if others think of it as highly as I do. An interesting side discussion would be to ask Batman fans to score Death of Superman, then ask Superman fans to score Nightfall. Is the fandom divided, except for those with mothers named Martha? I just want to point out that we gave Death of Superman 82, and then Nightfall coincidentally got 82 as well, so not 92. So, they're both... Yeah, it very much surprised me that they both had the same score, and I actually prefer Death of Superman to Nightfall, so if that's my personal bias. But the jury has spoken, and they both are ranked at 82, which is very strange coincidence. And then he went on to say, lastly, please don't forget about Wonder Woman the Contest, an arc where Diana was officially replaced as Wonder Woman by Artemis. Not as eventy as these others, but shows how the hero replacement trope was huge in the 90s. And I'd like to point out, we didn't forget that, and we gave Dr. Ange and Frank the opportunity to do a podcast on that, and it's in the feed. And technically, it happens slightly after 0 Hour, but, it filled a gap when I was stuck in America and not podcasting, so that was kind of helpful. Anyway, Doug, any last thoughts or last comments?
No, fade off into white. no, not really. I think we beat this 0 Hour horse quite a bit here, sir.
Right. Well, yeah.
But I want to thank you for letting me come in and fill some space, be an occupier for a little bit.
Oh, you're welcome, Doug. You're always welcome. Anyway, that brings us to the end. So if you, as always, if you want to go see the scores for this, head on over to Comicosity, which is the best comic website there is, with comic news and reviews and nothing else. But they have the DCOCD ladder, and you can look at all the scores that we've given. You can find links to all the episodes, and you can sort them. So you can see, okay, what's the worst one? What's the best one? You can fiddle with the ranking. You can put them in alphabetical order. You can do it however you like. And, it's 13 episodes in, we're painting quite a picture at this point of events. And speaking of which, next time we do DCOCD, we will be talking about, well, one I've been looking forward to, Underworld Unleashed.
Yes.
Yeah, 1995 crossover. So, I'm looking forward to that, and I hope you all are too. But if you want to get in contact with us, you can send us Gmail. If you want to get in contact with us, you can send us emails to dcocdcast@gmail.com, and we're on Twitter @dcocdcast, and you can track us down individually. Doug, where are you likely to be found most days?
On Twitter, I am DZAWISZA, that's DZavisha, and you mentioned Comicosity. I do some reviews and some other writing for Comicosity, so love that site as well.
Yeah, and you've also got mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com.
Yeah, that place, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, where we cover Doom Patrol. And I'm a little bit behind, but I'll get caught up.
Now you're doing the Lord's work over there. We're very impressed with that. Yeah, and you can find me on Twitter @reading_Hicks, H-I-X, if you care to. And I think that's all we've got time for. Thanks very much, Doug.
Thank you, sir.
All right, catch you all next time. Bye. There ain't no superheroes now. There ain't no superheroes there on the ground. Happy ever after. Counting down to zero. Superheroes now. There ain't no superheroes.